It's Wednesday and time for a weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. And John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Carl.
And also with us on the line from Rapid City is KELO-TV's Kevin Wooster. And Kevin, thanks for joining us for the second week in a row.
Good to be back. People are getting sick of me.
Well, John Hunter, Madison is capital for a day. I believe you met with the governor this morning?
Yes. He toured the Daily Leader offices in our printing company, and then he held a social for the wider community at 10 o'clock at a local diner.
So what else is happening in Madison? Is this just a celebratory event, or is there actual work that gets done during this Capitol for a day in Madison?
Well, Governor Dugard pointed out that this idea started with Governor Mickelson, and I remember it mostly as with Governor Rounds, but it's clearly different than the way Governor Rounds had it. In those days, he would bring cabinet members out to the town. They kind of set up a booths. So if you had a question about the transportation department, you could talk to that secretary and the Health and Human Services and so on. This is really more of a governor's day rather than the cabinet so much. So Governor Dugard is meeting with a lot of different constituents, and he pointed out the whole idea really is to get, you know, the governor out of Pierre and into towns in South Dakota, cities, and learn, listen, talk, and that sort of thing.
Now, for Madison itself, has the town sort of rolled out the red carpet for the governor, or is it just business as usual there?
No, I think it's some red carpet. We have flags out and so forth to celebrate being capital of the day, and I think especially places where the governor is going today, people wanted to put on the best foot forward. And there were a fair number of thank yous to the governor for action that he and state government took. You know, Lewis and Clark Water is coming to Madison at the end of 2016, even though the federal government hasn't funded its share, and then the state is providing sort of a bridge loan for that, and other things that have been successes. And so it was a pretty good feel-good day during the public portion of that.
Well, Kevin Wooster, do you think Capital for a Day events are helpful in bringing a little bit of state government closer to people around the state?
I love Capital for a Day events. They're fun to cover. I've covered a few in smaller towns and some in, you know, a bit larger towns. One a few years ago in Philip comes to mind, and it was just fun to see people react to that their government, the people that they may have to deal with but don't get to know at all. They get to meet them personally, and to me, it's just simply South Dakotan in its approach, and I think it was a great idea. I'd love to see it done.
Kevin, are you aware of other states that do something like this?
You know, I don't know. It's always dangerous to say what I just said. You know, oh, we work harder and we're closer to government and we do all those kinds of things. But it certainly is something that we're comfortable with. I would guess that there are outreaches there in other states. We don't have a corner on community or a corner on connectedness with our government, but I don't think anybody does it better than we do.
John Hunter, do you agree?
Yeah, in other states I've observed it would be pretty rare in a lot of cases, dense urban areas, to actually meet a legislator, a state legislator, you know, to say, I know I've met our state representative or state senator, and that's rare. In South Dakota's case, we know them pretty well, and in a lot of cases, people have met the governor and lieutenant governor and so on. So I think there's some scale to it. The smaller states probably do it better than larger states.
Go ahead.
If I can just say, John Thune was up at Buffalo doing one of the things that our congressional delegation does very well the other day, and one of the things he said to them was, my job is easy compared to your county commissioners. He was referring to a couple of people there because not only do they know your name and know what you did, they know where you live. and I think that's, again, all part of kind of an expectation that we have for that connection.
Well, while the governor is in Madison today, his Blue Ribbon Task Force on Education is meeting in Pierre this morning. on the schedule was a discussion of teacher quality and quantity. This, as we all know, is not just a South Dakota problem. And there was a report on Morning Edition today that said there are teacher shortages across the nation, from San Francisco to Louisville. John Hunter, if this is a nationwide problem, how can South Dakota fix it locally?
Well, I think it is a local problem, and it will be fixed locally. All these different places, even though it's occurring all over, education is funded locally, and most states, communities believe that local control is still best for that thing. But with the federal government kind of expanding its reach in so many areas, education is a natural one for the federal government to do it. So far, they've done kind of mostly with regulations and standards and so forth, and not necessarily kind of direct funding to local school districts. And given the financial state of the federal government, I wouldn't expect any financial stuff. So, it has to be fixed kind of on a statewide, in most cases, statewide basis, in some case, more locally. From all those examples you mentioned on Morning Edition, I think, and including South Dakota, it has to be fixed locally.
Kevin Wooster, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that certainly this is a national problem in areas, some areas worse than others. And I think the question out here is are we at a breaking point where we're really going to see profound impacts, much worse impacts than we've seen, you know, over the last few years, or the last decade, in terms of losing teachers and not being able to recruit and retain. And I think that's the argument that some people that are promoting a tax increase or some really, big plan to try and raise teacher salaries across the state are that's their argument, that we haven't seen anything yet, and that it could be worse here than it is in a lot of areas if we don't do something soon.
John Hunter, the concept of raising taxes, is that an option at all when dealing with the teacher salary situation, the teacher shortage? Is there even an appetite for that in South Dakota?
Well, I think there are occasional appetites for increasing taxes, and I think this task force, at least as I've heard, is dealing, both that all options are on the table, and whether that's something that gets transferred later to a legislature and governor is a kind of a different story. So the task force can do that, but I think we've seen pretty good success out of these task forces in recent years. The judicial reform task force, I think, was a success. Then the highway funding task force last summer, which did result in tax increases for roads and so on, appeared to be success. So it's possible. Remember, those kind of tax increases require a huge support in both chambers of the legislature and with the governor. So while I say they're on the table, and we've seen example of it with the highway, the taxes can be passed. I don't see an appetite necessarily for an income tax, for example, that people would do that. But there may be some other things.
And Kevin, one of those other things that's been discussed, I think some legislators have brought this up, is a temporary sales tax. Is that something that might happen?
Well, I certainly think that's going to get a serious look, and it hasn't been rejected even by a number of Republicans. The problem is, John touched on, you've got to get two-thirds, and then you've got to have the governor's support on it. So it's going to be a question of, how do you design it? Where does the money go? How are you going to use the money? And can you get two-thirds of the Republican-dominated legislature to vote for a hike like that?
The Education Task Force also discussing today distance technology to help share teachers with other districts and subjects, especially where there are needs. Looking at that, John Hunter, do you see that as a solution or a partial solution to the teacher shortage problem in South Dakota?
Absolutely. I think it can work, and I think it will work. If you'd asked Kevin and I 10 years ago about this, I think we would have been much more skeptical. But there's been so much education that has shifted to online, for better or worse. I think in some cases they've worked out some of the kinks and are able to deliver better quality education online. But whether it's universities or VOTEC schools or even high schools where you're getting this kind of thing, I think I think students of today are probably more open to that. And so I think that's especially, you know, in a state like South Dakota, where you have a lot of remote school districts, and if you want to deliver specialized education in a particular subject, I think sharing those by distance is absolutely a fact, and I think that will be a big part of what changes we'll see coming up.
Kevin, do you agree that that's going to be a big part of the changes?
I don't know that I would say a big part of it. I think it's probably could be a part of it. There may be some benefits to some school consolidation, although that's a dangerous and highly emotional process. But to me, again, it always comes back to money and quite a bit of it, and probably a newer increased tax.
Also on the subject of education, but higher education here, the Board of Regents voted to ask the governor to freeze tuition for in-state college students. The Regents made this request last year, too, but Governor Dugard didn't make it a part of his budget. He did a couple years back, however. What do you think the governor will do this year, John?
I think it's possible, and you know, all those budget requests are kind of rolling in. Now, there's a long cycle to that, of course. This is for the year that would start next July, so 11 months from now. But there'll be all sorts of, you know, because we had a balanced budget last year passed by the legislature, then revenues came in a little bit more than what we expected, about 1% or somewhere, maybe a little less than that. And then expenses were actually a little bit less than what was forecast, probably about 1%. So given those things, maybe a $20 million unexpected surplus there, I think you'll see requests fly in from everywhere. So whether it really is going to be a matter of prioritization. Having done it a couple years ago, I think the governor would be open to it again. But I, you know, it's and then you'll deal with the forecasts for the following year that will roll in during the legislative session.
Is this an important priority, freezing tuition, Kevin?
Well, yeah, I think it is important. It's important enough that I think the governor has an inclination toward it, but only if he can pay for it. You know, he's probably the most fiscally conservative or careful, cautious, thoughtful governor that I've covered in terms of the way he approaches a budget. He just is very, very concerned about being able to pay for what you do, and that's going to be the issue here. How do you pay for it?
And John, looking at this, any downsides to freezing tuition? I mean, what are the pluses and minuses here with this idea of freezing tuition for public university students?
Well, I think it addresses a problem that increasing tuition for students, which has been much higher than the rate of inflation over a long period of time, student debt has become a burden. I think that certainly wouldn't help it, and it would play well with others. The downside is that I think the K-12 folks are going to say, hey, we need it more, and whatever resources are going to be floating around needs to head toward state aid education. I think for every proposal, that'll get balanced against the need to go to K-12.
Kevin Wooster, in your KELO blog this week, you wrote about former Democratic lawmaker Frank Klocek as a possible candidate to run against Senator John Thune in 2016. Why would Frank Klocek be a good candidate to run against Senator Thune?
Well, he's available. We used to joke that Frank used to run statewide campaigns when he was running for his legislative district seat, because he would tackle any subject, and he's not afraid of a fight. And he's a very people don't give him the credit he deserves for having a political sense. He's a country guy for sure, and he's not polished, but he won. I think I said in the blog more than 20 years. He called me up to correct me and make sure that I knew it was actually 22. I thought that was pretty close, but 22 and more than 20. He also told me he's not running. He's not going to do it. We just talked this morning, and he said, I appreciate it, but I'm not running. I like farming and too much. And I just think he was somebody that would challenge Thune on important issues, would be willing to take a loss, which, let's face it, almost anybody they run is going to take a loss against Thune this next time around. but he would raise issues. It was an embarrassment, I think, for the Democratic Party. It was unfortunate for democracy and the process that the Democrats couldn't put anyone up against John Thune the last time around. And I just hope, as a reporter and as a South Dakotan, that doesn't happen again. So I was looking for somebody that might make it interesting, and Frank would have made it interesting and entertaining.
I will
tell you this.
Yeah.
Somebody told me this morning that KSFY weatherman Phil Schreck is considering a run for the Senate as a Democrat. So throw that out there.
So Phil Schreck is a possibility. We don't have any official word there, though?
I have no official word. Somebody just called and said, have you not heard this? And I said, I have not. But you know, maybe Phil will call in and answer.
Well, John Hunter, looking at this whole idea, Frank Klocek apparently not interested in running for Senate against Thune. Who knows about a Phil Schreck campaign? But that brings up the question of, it seems like, according to most observers, Senator Thune is a lock. Why would anyone run for Senate on the Democratic side if they know that they have no chance of winning?
Well, I'm glad you asked about Kevin's column, because I think he deserves a Pulitzer Prize for this. That blog. I was captivated by that idea, and I just heard about that, and so, and I'm glad you asked. Give me the forum for a minute to talk about that. So, Frank, in a lot of ways, would be a great candidate. As Kevin said, he would challenge Senator Thune. He would be willing to go to every state fair, county fair, whatever, and speak on these things. I always remember him as a legislator who was not afraid to run something up the flagpole that was going to lose. I mean, that was just, I mean, and he stuck yep. by it. He was still friendly about it, and he would always be promoting his cause, and it would lose 9-0 in committee or something. So I think it was a terrific idea. I did talk to a prominent Democrat this morning about that idea, and he kind of said, well, I understand, but I think we can come up with a formidable candidate, that kind of thing. So I agree with Kevin in the fact that it is important for South Dakota and for America to field sound candidates for these things. And certainly John Thune has been a great senator and been a very popular and has money and all those kinds of things. But I think it's just healthy for the process to always have good candidates, whatever they are, and Democrats are in a position that apparently last time couldn't field a candidate, and I wish they had, and this time I just don't know, but that's I think a healthy part of democracy, even at a local level, to have multiple choices. That frankly, even to have, you know, 16 Republicans running for president is not a joke. I think that's good, and they'll drop out slowly, but giving choices, and I think it's good for America.
Well, talking about formidable candidates, Kevin, who could they possibly be on the Democratic side for U.S. Senate and governor?
Well, the weatherman idea was the most exciting, interesting thing I've heard, and it may be, you know, maybe just a fancy, but that's the problem. When you ask Democrats, as I wrote, I think, in the blog or somewhere recently, they look like you just hit them in the head with a plank, and it wasn't a political plank. I mean, they just look confused. And maybe it's because they have a plan, and it's going to emerge here shortly, but, you know, time is important in these things. And the Republicans, on the other hand, have a you know, fairly deep and obvious bench, and that includes both you know, the Senate and the House, and obviously the Senate's set. The House seemed to be set, unless the member in the House right now runs for governor at some point soon, and I certainly hear that Kristi Noem is very interested in that possibility. And for the Democrats, the question always is, what's Brendan Johnson going to do? What's Stephanie Hirsch-Sandland going to do? Because Hirsch-Sandland is a formidable candidate at any point she steps into any statewide election, and the Democrats are very short on formidable candidates. And Brendan Johnson seems to have that potential, although he hasn't proven it yet.
Well, this is a question that I've asked the various junkies, different opinions here. John, and maybe I've even asked you this, are we getting to that point where, you know, if someone's serious, that they need to announce their candidacy?
I think it can still be a while yet. South Dakotans are not as much, I mean, the presidential campaign has to get started now for, you know, primaries that occur next year, but I don't think that has to take place. If someone who's completely out of the blue, the earlier the better. I think it was Jonathan Ellis who was talking about, you know, getting to in fairs, you know, even, you know, state fairs and county fairs and those, Sioux Empire Fair, and those are all important to get to and shake hands and meet people. So it's a great season to do that. But I think you could have a formidable candidate a fair amount later, maybe even early next year.
I think John's right in terms of an announcement. You need to have a name out there. I think the troubling thing for the Democrats is that when I sit down with Democrats, they can't come up with names. You know, Republicans can come up with 15 names for when you look at things, and that's understandable. But there should be at least names by now circulating. And I think now Billy Sutton's name comes up all the time, and I think he has a statewide potential. Mm-hmm. But I talked to a couple of Republicans about the Senate race, and they said, well, they're certainly not going to waste Billy Sutton on the U.S. Senate race this time around, and I think that's true. Would they look at the governor's race this soon for Billy Sutton, or is he a potential House candidate, depending on where Kristi Noem is? I certainly think he has that kind of potential.
It's been 2 weeks since Democrat Paula Hawks announced that she's running against Republican Congresswoman Kristi Noem, who's expected to seek re-election, and talking about getting out there and shaking hands. She's been out and about doing that now. Do you see that after 2 weeks, John Hunter, that perhaps she might be able to help excite Democrats a little bit?
Well, I think that in that case, where it's a name that's not familiar to statewide voters, I think the earlier the better to establish that, and probably not a lot of money yet. So I think, you know, the more time on the road. She has not yet been to our part of the state, at least in our readership area. So we have not seen any, I'm not sure, other than the announcement in the newspaper, I'm not sure anyone is familiar with her around here yet.
And Kevin Wooster, do you see her as maybe exciting the Democrats a little bit?
I think that she seems like a credible candidate, and they need credible candidates. They need somebody that, you know, that's already won an election or two, and knows what campaigning is about, has been in the legislature. You know, I think her time there is not much different from what Kristi Noem had in when she decided to run. But I underestimated Kristi Noem. I didn't recognize her immediately as the, you know, really a political phenom. That she's a very natural politician. That doesn't come easily for everybody, and she hit the right time and with the right message. And also, she's a Republican. So the Democrats have all those things stacked against them. But nonetheless, I think when you start out with a legislator, a state legislator that's got some experience, and she comes from a part of the state where she may be able to spread her message fairly quickly and raise some money at least, I think that's a good sign for them.
Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Kevin, thanks so much for joining the program.
Sure enough.
And John, thanks for your time as well.
Thanks, Carl.